This is Gridiron Graduates, a weekly podcast covering all things football. Episode number 47, Sideline Reporting, recorded September 21st, 2016.
Hey, what's going on, friends? It's your boy, Bill Rossetti, hitting you guys back up on another edition of the Gridiron Graduates. Welcome back. Appreciate you listening, as always. And, of course, as always, my good buddy Ian Wharton joining me. What's going on today, my brother?
Hey, man. Not too much. Surprisingly, I have not landed on the injured reserve, despite the rumors and reports. So I've avoided it this far, and I'm hoping to continue.
Yeah, absolutely. Not the best of weeks so far. A lot of injuries going down, of course, biting one team in particular, and we'll get to that in a second. It's just a crazy week between, you know, all the college games and a lot of the results there, and then the NFL, just a wild weekend. And so let's kind of jump into it, and yeah, we'll start with the injury talk. And boy, when it rains, it pours, it feels, in Minnesota. Obviously, Teddy Bridgewater injured in the preseason, which led to Sam Bradford. Now we find out that Adrian Peterson, we knew he tore his meniscus a couple days ago. Thought maybe he'd only be out a couple weeks. Now it turns out he's going to have surgery, and he'll be out, the reports are saying, minimum 3 to 4 months, and up to 6 months. So, more or less, he's probably done for the season. If he comes back, it'll be right at the very end of the season. And then we also find out today that Matt Khalil, the left tackle, also placed on injured reserve. Just tough going so far. Tough week for the Vikings. That's three players at three key positions, arguably, you know, three of the biggest key positions on offense, your quarterback, your running back, and your left tackle, all injured, all either out for the season or at least close to out for the season. So just really unfortunate for a team that, even with Sam Bradford, started off the season pretty promising at 2-0, coming off a big win over the Packers.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty unbelievable to say that they're going to be missing three of their best offensive players besides Stephon Diggs. And we're only entering week three. Like, that's just, to see that type of attrition already is really scary stuff. So, you know, for their outlook, it's not even that Matt Khalil was good, and it's not so much even that Adrian Peterson was playing great. He really wasn't. I do think he's starting to show his age, and I think we can really start to wonder how much longer we're actually going to see him in the NFL. I think his days are numbered, certainly, with the Vikings. I don't think he'll return next year. He's got an $18 million cap hit next year. So, I mean, there's no reason to keep an over the 30-year threshold running back at that type of money. It's just easier just to draft someone and replace him, even if it's not at that type of caliber. So hopefully he comes back and we see him before the season is over, but you know, he's a tough guy and he's a bit of a freak himself, so he may defy those long prognostications of like 6 months or so. And we'll see. We'll obviously find out here sooner than later, you know, what the exact ailment is. But you know, these are really tough injuries. Like, I don't know what's worse for them, the fact that these happened at this time. And by the time Peterson comes back, if he comes back, let's say 100%, and looks like the Adrian Peterson of new, if it's worse that, you know, when he get them back, they might just be completely out of the race, or is it worse that they even tried and gave up that first-round pick for Sam Bradford? Because had they not done that, and Bradford looked really good in his debut, let's say that they don't do that. Let's say that they just go forward with Sean Hill and just see how the season goes. Obviously, we can guess that the season wouldn't have gone overly well. But say they do that, and then all of a sudden, if they lost Khalil and Adrian Peterson, you're probably looking at a team that's going to be picking in the top 5 to 10. And you're saying, well, maybe long term, it would have been better for them to be in that position, get Teddy Bridgewater back next year, plus a 10, a top 10 pick. Then you could say, well, if you get that, maybe long term, that's a better situation than what they're currently looking at. So it's just really tough for them. I mean, obviously, that's not preferable to have any injuries. But that's so is the life as the NFL. So it's just really rough.
And another team that just got bit again by the injury bug, the Cleveland Browns. First-round pick Corey Coleman broke his hand in practice. We'll see how long he's out for. So this is a team now that will be starting their third different quarterback already this season. If you go back to last season, 5 different starting quarterbacks in 5 games, which is quite astonishing, really.
Yeah.
You know, it's Johnny Manziel, then they went to Austin Davis week 17 of last year, and then of course started the season with Robert Griffin III. He gets injured, in steps Josh McCown. He gets injured, and now you're looking at Cody Kessler starting this week for the Browns. And now without Corey Coleman, of course, Josh Gordon still suspended. Not ideal for the Cleveland Browns.
No, not at all. I mean, talking about another cursed franchise, Corey Coleman getting hurt today with a broken hand after his breakout week 2, a couple touchdowns, really did a good number on the Ravens. And then, of course, Cody Kessler stepping in and Coleman now being out with that broken hand. It's just they've really nailed this tanking for this season, and obviously not on purpose, but I don't know if it's an accident that they had this entered the season with two fairly injury-prone quarterbacks. I mean, both of these guys, McCown and Griffin, have had injury concerns throughout their career, and you know, now they have Kessler, and quite frankly, I don't know anyone that was high on him. The pick was absolutely shocking when they made it, and we're going to see how he does. I mean, the Dolphins' defense has looked pretty bad to this point, but I have to think that this is where the Dolphins get their first win of the season. And I don't know if it's going to be particularly close either. Like, this Browns team, if McCown does miss the entire season or Griffin does miss the entire season, which we don't know is 100% sure yet that they'll miss both for the whole year, if they do, this might be one of those 0-16 teams. Like, this has the ingredients of being just that. It's just they're lacking so much talent on both sides of the ball, and their only hope was to have one of these veteran quarterbacks, Griffin and or McCown, either one, just be able to score, you know, like crazy, which they could because they have a lot of offensive talent, especially once Josh Gordon comes back. But, I mean, without even a fairly decent quarterback, it's just going to be hard to do because it looks like their defense may give up, you know, about 30 points a game.
And the only thing keeping this like a perfect tanking world for the Browns is that the Eagles are sitting at 2-0 right now. Now, granted, you know, the Eagles haven't exactly played strong teams, one of them, of course, being Cleveland, but, you know, early on, the Eagles right now would have a low first-round pick that they would ship over to Cleveland. But it may, right now, it looks like it may work out because with the Vikings, you know, with all their injuries, the Eagles may end up with a higher first-round pick anyway.
You know, yeah.
Remains to be seen. Still 15 weeks to go, but, you know, it's just funny to see how it works out sometimes. It may work out that they kind of trade it up without actually trading up, if that makes sense, which is it'll be funny if it happens, but again, it's only week 2, a lot of time left.
Yeah, absolutely. Things can change. It's worked out well, though, for the Eagles. Like, I didn't really realize how weak their schedule was. They do play the Minnesota Vikings before the midway point, like right around like the midway point of the season, they play the Steelers next, obviously.
Yep.
But with those two, those are really the only two competent teams that they have facing coming up on the schedule. And then after that, in the second half of the year, it does get more difficult. But they're in a position, and I think that Wentz is going to continue to look good, at, you know, partially due because of an easier schedule. Which, hey, you know, that's fine. What, the ultimate test for these young quarterbacks is always what happens after the defenses start actually game planning and adjusting for what you're doing. And so that's going to happen around midway point in the season. So I'm interested to see how this offense evolves when that takes place. I think that's a big challenge for not only a coaching staff, but also the personnel. But, you know, you're right, though. They're certainly off to a good start this season. Definitely doing more than I think most people expected right out the gate.
Yeah, absolutely. But, yeah, like you said, Pittsburgh this week, so that'll be a tough one. It should be a real good game. It's a 4:25 kickoff. So definitely the state of PA, especially in my neck of the woods, definitely looking forward to that game because my, of course, is littered with Eagles and Steelers fans. So definitely can't wait for that one. So let's take a quick look back at week two. I'll just kind of pick out some highlights. I want to touch quick on the Thursday night game. Jets beating the Bills 37-31. Matt Forte, great game, 30 carries, 100 yards, 3 touchdowns. What upset me, though, for those of you who have been following, I'm part of the Scott Fish Bowl representing this podcast. Unfortunately, I'm 0-2 right now, and it sucks because I had Matt Forte, and I essentially wasted that performance by falling short. But on the plus side, if the playoffs were to start right now, I would have the last playoff spot despite being 0-2 because I would have enough points. So, you know, that's a positive. That's a bit of a silver lining right now as long as I can keep putting up points. And I have Jerick McKinnon on my team. So got a little bit of upside there. But on the field, you know, again, like I said, Matt Forte and really that entire Jets offense looking good. But hey, you know, let's blame the offense of the Bills. Let's make Greg Roman the scapegoat, even though they scored 31 points. Now, granted, not all of them were on offense, but still, it's not like offense was the problem. But we go and make Greg Roman the scapegoat because, of course, Rex Ryan's not going to fire his brother, even though I think at the end of the season they're all going to be gone anyway because I think Buffalo's going to eventually clean house because it's looking like a long season for the Bills.
Yeah, that was definitely not a good look for them. I thought Roman did a nice job with the Bills. He did a good job, I think, in San Francisco. Obviously, with all the turnover there, he got the raw end of the stick. And eventually, you know, hey, that happens. Your tenure wears out, and this is just what happens in coaching. But, you know, you look at what he did in Buffalo. He was definitely a big reason why Tyrod Taylor had all this success. As a first-year starter, now as a second-year starter, he's a limited talent guy. I think he's talented enough to be a starter, but, you know, I don't think it's fair to really have expected Taylor to take a massive leap forward in the first 2 weeks. It's one of those things that either it happens or it doesn't, and you may have to give him the full second season to let that happen. It's just a matter of experience and again, what natural talent can do for you. So, and it's not like the offense was bad. Like, if they were disappointed in Taylor, that's one thing, but they shouldn't have been. So it's just really baffling. I understand the need to make a change, but I felt like this was not the right change. Honestly, I didn't think any change was needed. You should have given him at least a little bit more time. If you're going to fire anybody, Rex Ryan was the one to be fired. Like, I don't see Rex Ryan surviving the season. I think he's gone probably maybe like halfway through the year. It's just one of those things where if you're already showing that type of disappointment, then, like, what did you expect out of this season? I know, like, people were talking about playoffs or bust before the year, and if that's the barometer, then you should have just kept Greg Roman and given it at least until, like, you're totally out of the playoff race. So it's just it's just a really strange move, and I think it shows that they're just a very desperate team and franchise, and I understand why they're desperate. They haven't seen the playoffs in forever, but that just I don't think this is a move that helps them get there.
Some other notes. One thing I want to ask you too, because obviously you're doing work with NFL 1000, looking at the AFC cornerbacks, so you're looking at a lot of AFC defenses. And part of this stems from, you know, I was watching Jenny Varentis from the MMQB do a live Q&A on Facebook earlier, so this question kind of stems from that. But the Oakland Raiders, you know, all the talk preseason was how strong on paper the defense was going to look, you know, with the addition of Bruce Irvin and Sean Smith. Defense right now is allowing 35 points a game. They gave up 34 to the Saints last week, gave up 35 in week two in a loss to the Falcons at home. And I'm sure you've checked out some of the defense because, you know, again, with you looking at guys like Sean Smith and DJ Hayden, what's been going on with the Raiders' defense? I mean, obviously the offense is there, but, you know, what's happened to this defense that was supposed to be really good?
Yeah, I mean, they added a lot of talent. I think individually they have quite a bit of talent, but we just haven't seen all that individual talent come together yet. And some of that issue is coaching. I have not been impressed by all of the communication issues it seems like they have. There's a lot of broken coverages. That's not necessarily just on the players. I think that that's definitely having to do with coaching. And in fairness to the coaching, when you have that many new players, you're trying to integrate, you're trying to get used to their skill set. It's one of those things where sometimes it takes some time, whether it be on offense or defense. It can take some time to really figure out what works well for the defense. And I think that they've had a couple of tough matchups, especially with the wide receivers that they've played. I mean, Julio Jones, you know, he just took a couple of pretty normal slant plays and took him to the, you know, big gains and even to the house because of a simple coverage break. And so not every receiver is going to be able to do that. Sean Smith has struggled. I don't think he's been at fault for everything. You know, he at the moment, people are blaming him, I think, a little bit more. And then as we go back to the film, we're seeing that there's some issues with the safety play, with the overall reaction of the defense. It just seems like guys don't necessarily know where they're supposed to be and what their assignments are. So, you know, that's going to happen when you have four new starters or four new players that you have started working into their lineup. And, you know, I would give it a little bit more time before we really start to panic about this team. They've got to start playing better. There's no doubt about that. However, defensively, I would say give it another 2 weeks. And if they're still doing this in 2 weeks, then I'm going to really start to worry. And I'm going to say, okay, did Sean Smith just cash in and now he's not working as hard or whatever it may be? Or has he physically just taken a bit of a step back? Personally, I haven't really seen that. It's not really the takeaway that I've had. Some of these plays are just the offensive player just got them, and that's going to happen. But he is one of the better cover corners in the league, so I have confidence in him that he's going to bounce back a little bit here in the very near future. And then, so you know, from the front seven though too, we've got to see more. We've got to see more from Khalil Mack. We know that the secondary was weak entering the season, so you've got to see this pass rush get after it and actually be a little bit more effective. The linebacker play hasn't been overly strong either, and that's opening up the cornerbacks for even more big plays. So, you know, it's not easy. Again, the whole unit has to be working well together. And right now, every level of the three levels of the defense is struggling. And so when you've got that, you've got a bad unit. So, you know, it's one of those things now, as they're entering week three, they're going to have to start, you know, kind of getting it together this week against Tennessee. this is where I would expect, okay, we need to see more positive results against a little bit less talented of an offense.
And of course, I mean, you know, you look at their first two opponents, they did face two pretty explosive offenses. Obviously, the Saints offenses can score points at will, and if they're clicking, so can the Falcons with Matt Ryan and Julio Jones. So, you know, it's not like they're playing pushover offenses, but, you know, like you said, let's see if they can build it up over the next couple weeks, you know, starting this week against Marcus Mariota. Another thing I want to touch on from week two, I always say one of my favorite things at the start of the season is the week one overreactions. And one of my favorites from week one was everybody crowning Washington as division champs after the Giants-Cowboys game. Well, here we are 2 weeks into the season. Washington's 0-2. New York's 2-0. And they play each other this week, and if the Giants win, well, all of a sudden, you're essentially looking at a four-game lead. 3-0 versus 0-3, and the Giants would have the tiebreaker. So,
Yeah, I mean, this is already one of those games where it's not quite must-win, but
it's pretty close.
Yeah, it's pretty close. I mean, teams facing a must-win in week three, generally speaking, are going to be poorly off anyways. That's just not a sentence that you want to say.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, win or lose, the fact that you were in that situation to begin with is not good. However, a win this week for Washington would obviously put them in a much more comfortable seat moving forward. But, you know, you're looking at a couple of these teams, it's not just going to be the Redskins with a lot of pressure on them. The Dolphins need to win to avoid losing to the Browns. You would probably say that the Jaguars, if they have any hope of really becoming what people had hoped, They're another team that's really facing it. The Raiders, again, I think this is a must-win for them. Just because it's a weaker opponent, you need to stack up as many wins as possible. The Seahawks have not played overly well. They're facing the 49ers. So it's some of these games, there's not many, and some are more dire than others. But, I mean, I think if you're looking at this game and the Dolphins and Browns game, I'd say, you know, whoever loses this week, if the Redskins lose or if the Dolphins or Browns lose, and I'll really just say the Dolphins if the Dolphins lose, if either of those two teams lose, your season's not necessarily over, because we saw last year Kansas City ripped off that huge winning streak to get themselves back in it. But I'm going to say that it's pretty close to being over already. Now, not impossible. Injuries happen, and the right injury that comes about can get you right back into things. But you don't want to be behind that eight ball that far.
Yeah, and neither of these teams really look like they have the talent that Kansas City did last year to really reel off all those wins. So, yeah, if either of these teams start 0-3, you know, especially looking at the Dolphins, you know, in the AFC East with New England, if they start 0-3, they're in big trouble. And like you said, with Washington losing to the Giants, that would put the Giants at 3-0. It would already put them with two division wins as well. And the Redskins will already start 0-2 in the division. And, of course, you know, even if, say, then Washington wins the second game, well, New York's already off to a head start in the division record, which is the second tiebreaker. So, like we said, it's not 100% a must-win, but it's pretty darn close if you're a Redskins fan. And then, yeah, even like some of the other teams you mentioned, like Seattle, like, boy, yeah, they're 1-1, but, you know, the offense just does not look good. I mean, the fact that they only put up 3 points on a Rams team that got absolutely embarrassed by the 49ers on national television in week one. I get it was LA's, you know, it's the Rams return to LA. Everyone's excited in LA to finally have football back, but still. 9-3 losing to the Rams. That's not good if you're a fan of the Seattle Seahawks.
No, absolutely. To me, and I know last year they played a majority of the season without Marshawn Lynch being beast mode. But this still, to me, looks like an offense that is missing him. They just miss his presence. And what happened when Lynch was out is that we saw Russell Wilson play at a level that, quite frankly, was probably unsustainable. Not necessarily saying he's not elite. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is that for him to operate at his highest level, he needs a good running game. And that's okay. Like, that's not to take anything away, but with that, such a bad offensive line mm-hmm. in place, he's going to have to get some sort of relief through some sort of avenue. And so we'll see if Christine Michael's been okay so far. Thomas Rawls has not looked good so far. But, you know, and I really doubt they're going to get Marshawn Lynch back. Look, if I'm Seattle, what I'm saying is we've got to get this offense rolling ASAP, but not necessarily by putting more pressure on Russell Wilson. We've got to figure out how to avoid doing just that. How can we make this a little bit easier on him? Letting him create and run around and extend plays, yes, it can work. He's a great player. He thrives at that game. But it's not going to be something that I think is sustainable for them. And you also want to keep him healthy. I mean, it just takes one shot. And so I say, if I'm them, continue to run the rock. You've got to find your identity. You've got to find that toughness again without Marshawn Lynch. And so which running back can you latch on to as a starter now can bring you that attitude that Marshawn Lynch helped you find? Whether someone's as effective as he is isn't really the concern. It's, does he bring that toughness to the table and bring that identity to the table? Because right now they're lacking identity. And they can get caught up in this game. San Francisco, you know, they're 1-1. And Chip Kelly, I think, has these guys playing great football. You know, considering the talent that he has to work with, they are a much more competitive team than I think anyone expected. So it's not a long shot to see San Francisco maybe even pull this one out if this battered Seahawks team, who's had a couple of injuries already as well, and that's also part of the issue, but with them being banged up, could they lose this week? I mean, I wouldn't pick that. That wouldn't be my guess for this game. You're always going to go with team talent, usually over the situation and the matchup. But, I think they do end up winning this game. But I'm telling you, though, don't sleep on this game. I think it will be a competitive one.
I mean, for a while, San Francisco gave Carolina a game before the Panthers pulled away late.
Yep. And that's a pretty good accomplishment for a team that's that far away from actually being competitive mm-hmm. As far as, like, a talented roster. So, you know, it's one of those things where we've just got to keep an eye out on the Seattle team and they're lucky that Arizona hasn't really started out the strongest possible. Obviously, last week was much more encouraging, but week one loss really could cost them in this division race. They beat the crap out of the Buccaneers last week, 40-7, and that's really who we expect the Cardinals to be. But they've got to continue on gaining some wins every week and try to stack as many as possible before Seattle turns it on like they did last year. Because if they turn it around like they did last year, they'll be just fine. But it's going to be it's one of those things where you just don't know. You can't predict them to just turn around right away mm-hmm. and instantly, boom, now we're going to go 9-1 like we did last year, 7-2 like we did last year. You can't count on that.
So looking ahead to week 3, definitely some interesting games on tap. Thursday night game, Houston at New England. Jimmy Garoppolo, of course, got injured last week. So Jacoby Brissett, the rookie quarterback out of NC State, a guy that I kind of liked coming out of college. I thought he was pretty flashy, and I'm curious to see how he does. He's slated to get the start for the Patriots. And Julian Edelman is slated to be the backup to Brissett. That should be quite interesting. And, of course, the Texans, that defense has looked pretty strong the first 2 weeks of the season. They had a nice win last week over the Chiefs. So, and, of course, being on a short week, you know, not much time for Brissett to get first-team reps. I'm picking New England to win this game because, you know, just because of Bill Belichick, I think he finds a way to pull this one out. But obviously I would not be surprised if Houston goes in and gets the win here, considering the situation for the Patriots.
Yeah, I cannot believe that Garoppolo got, I mean, I knew it right away too, that, you know, it looked like Garoppolo got hurt pretty badly. It turns out it may not be a long-term injury, but you know, with the shoulder, you just never really know. You could take one shot, just like Romo with his collarbone, and boom, then he's back on the ground again. Okay. It's going to be interesting to see. The Patriots clearly did not trust Brissett last week against the Dolphins when the Dolphins came storming back. It's like a switch had flipped middle of that game in that second half. And I'll tell you what, the Patriots were not taking it easy on the Dolphins. That's not Bill Belichick style. That's not what was happening. Now, maybe on offense they were, but LeGarrette Blount was pretty effective running the ball. So he was just doing what worked. But, I mean, with Brissett, I'm assuming he's going to have to throw this game probably around 20 or so times, maybe even more. And that's not really a recipe for success, I don't think. You know, maybe Brissett can go out there and prove us wrong. But as far as a mid-round quarterback coming in week three, totally unprepared. You know, it's just like Cody Kessler. He's just totally unprepared for this stage. And in fact, I would say Brissett's better than Kessler. I don't think that's really the question. But I still think it's a difficult situation to go into just because, you know, he's going to go in there for maybe 1 week. And then the next week after, we could see Garoppolo back. Mm-hmm. So, or worst comes worst, Brissett starts the second game. But this is a really good game, I think, for Houston to really show, hey, we are for real. Yes, even beating this banged up, injured Patriots team, it's not going to be an impressive win, but it's one that they have to get. They must get this. This is a team that has not been overly successful in the playoffs the last few years. And even though this won't matter as far as the Patriots outlook, I think this will help internally for the Texans. If they get back to the playoffs this year, which I expect them to, they've won some games, but I think that they need to look back at this game and say, hey, we needed to win this game, and we did. And it's just one of those things where it's a confidence builder. It's not necessarily going to hurt the Patriots if they lose this game, but I think it could definitely help the Texans, even if you beat a beat-up Patriots team, because that's what teams look at. They look at this Patriots team, and you know, beating them is such a good confidence booster that, you know, long-term, Bill O'Brien understands, hey, this is what these guys do. We've tried to emulate them a little bit, and we're starting to do our own thing now, which I really respect them for. So I do expect Houston to win this game for sure, but it's kind of hard because it's hard picking against Bill Belichick.
Mm-hmm. And then looking down the road, if Houston does win this game, and you look at, you know, when you get close to the playoffs and you start looking at seeding, because these, we're talking a couple potential division winners here. Houston gets this game. That's a head-to-head sweep over Kansas City and New England, two teams that will likely be in contention to win their division. So if those three are stacked against each other and say they end up tied, that's going to give Houston a good chance to get a higher seed if they can steal this one. So, yeah, like you said, even with – and it because of how banged up New England is, that just makes it more of an opportunity for Houston to really take advantage and really steal this one. A couple other games that kind of stand out. Denver at Cincinnati should be a good one. Trevor Siemian has played pretty well through 2 weeks. He had another good game against the Colts. Bengals coming off a tough loss to the Steelers, so they need to bounce back. You know, we already talked about Washington, New York. We talked about Oakland, Tennessee. Philly, Pittsburgh. you know, what are you looking at this week? What stands out to you for week three?
Well, you know, one, can guys stay healthy?
Less injured week than we had in week two. Let's hope for less news of players going on IR and whatnot.
Yeah. I mean, that was really one of my biggest takeaways from last week, and I hate to say that, but it's like, goodness, we're going to end the first month of the NFL season, which, by the way, that's crazy to say that at the end of not this week, but next week is already the conclusion of the 25%, the quarter mark of the regular season. Yeah, like, we're already there, but by the end of the first month, just based off the first 2 weeks, we're looking at some of these rosters and saying, oh, wow, like, we're already looking at players who really don't have any business being on the field, thrust into major roles. And so how those players perform, maybe they prove people wrong, maybe they prove me wrong or anyone else. And hopefully that's the case. You know, I don't root for anyone to fail. But so my big takeaway entering this week from last week is, can guys stay healthy? As far as individual games, I'm looking at how do the Bills come back from firing Greg Roman? They've got a really difficult game against the Arizona Cardinals at home in a 1 p.m. game. They should be able to win that game. As crazy as that might sound, that locker room should be unified, and they should come out desperate because they're facing a Super Bowl contender, maybe even one of the favorites, at home at an advantageous time slot as well. So they've got to come out strong. I'm certainly also looking over at the Jaguars and Ravens. I know I had mentioned that. You've got the 0-2 Jaguars against the 2-0 Ravens, which is surprising. I don't think the Ravens are that good of a team. Obviously, the Jaguars, I think they were a year early. A lot of people thought that they would come out and do big things this year. Honestly, they may need to move on from their coaching staff. I think that's a team that Gus Bradley, I agreed with giving him as much time as they have. But now that he has the talent to actually do some things, it just does not look like the staff really knows what they're doing. They've done positive things on offense, but on defense, they just look lost. And you can't have a defensive head coach and have that be the case. So I'm looking to see, can the Jaguars bounce back, get their first W, and end the Ravens' undefeated season?
Yeah, it's tough, you know, giving up 38 points to a San Diego team that just lost Keenan Allen and has now also lost Danny Woodhead for the season. You know, once again, just like last season, this offense is starting to get picked apart by injuries. And, you know, like we talked about the Raiders, all the talk on the Jaguars going into the season was how strong the defense was going to be. You know, I was in love with it too, obviously, you know, especially after the draft when they got Jalen Ramsey and Miles Jack. But, you know, the way people are talking, especially someone like Miles Jack, still needs time to kind of come more into himself and kind of develop a little bit. And, you know, and it was a tough loss to week one. You know, they're obviously wishing they could have had that one back. The San Diego game, you know, really were never in it. So, but yeah, they lose this one and start 0-3. You know, you could start chalking them up as one of the major disappointments. You know, again, like you said, you know, they might have been a year early, you know, and then a lot of people were pegging them. I know some people pegged them to win the division and whatnot. So, yeah, it would definitely be a bit of a disappointment if they go and start the season 0-3. And then the Monday night game, you know, just kind of touch on that too. It'll be an interesting game just because of how emotional it's going to be. Because it'll be the 10-year anniversary of the Saints returning to New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina against the same opponent too, in the Atlanta Falcons. So, so it should be an interesting week three. And of course, we'll be back next week to, like we said, hopefully not talk about as many injuries and just simply talk about football.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
But let's flip over to the college side, too, because certainly some fun things happened over the week. Your two teams definitely came up with big wins last week. We'll start with Ohio State. Obviously, big, big, big win over Oklahoma. Essentially, you might as well say now that Oklahoma's playoff hopes are dead now that they have two losses. Both losses to your two favorite teams, by the way, so that's got to make you feel pretty good.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Talk about an incredible performance from that defense. A young secondary like Malik Hooker, who, by the way, looks like the next Earl Thomas. Marshawn Lattimore, very talented cornerback, just a sophomore, extremely athletic. And then on offense, Noah Brown. Four touchdown receptions, including the catch of the year, guaranteed catch of the year, behind the back of a defender, well covered, makes this like one-handed type, two-handed catch. It's just insane. So I was really surprised that the Buckeyes dominated the way that they did. Now, Oklahoma kind of stayed in it long enough to make it interesting. But overall, though, you know, I was extremely impressed by the Buckeyes. I think this is the number one team in the nation, if I'm going to be honest. Obviously, you know, people might say that's a little bit biased, but I also saw the Alabama Crimson Tide barely be able to pull out a win against Ole Miss, which Ole Miss with another killer, killer collapse at home, too, after beating Alabama twice there in a row. I thought that they were going to pull it out by halftime, but Alabama had staged that big comeback, gained all that momentum back, which I do believe in momentum. And, you know, I was really impressed by Alabama. I just, you know, hey, you're really flipping a coin between teams at that high on the totem pole. Between those two teams, and then also you're talking about probably Louisville, who wiped the floor with Florida State. I thought that'd be a great game. It was a terrible game, but it was exciting to see Louisville and my boy Lamar Jackson go out there and just have a fantastic performance, just unstoppable at the quarterback position.
Yeah, I mean, I was at our high school game on Saturday afternoon, so I was out when that game was going on. When I was following that score and just, you know, even just following the score and seeing how much Louisville dominated Florida State was just absolutely mind-blowing. You know, for Louisville to put up 63 points on a Florida State team that a lot of people not just picked to go to the playoffs, but they had a good following of people that picked them to win it all this year.
Yep.
And Louisville just absolutely embarrassed them. And now obviously you're talking about Louisville being in the playoff hunt, no doubt. Now, you know, obviously they still have a game with Clemson looming, but, you know, wow. And obviously the rankings reflect that now. They jumped all the way to number 3 now in the AP poll. Ohio State is at number 2, and of course Alabama number 1, but like you said, Alabama had to kind of back their way into a win there. It was close, and Ole Miss definitely had their shots, but Alabama was able to pull it out there. But the big upset of the week, the FBS killer themselves, North Dakota State, goes to Iowa and beats the Hawkeyes 23-21. Wow.
All I'm saying though is after this game, it's a really good game, by the way. How is this team not in the top 25? I mean, can they be voted in the top 25, correct? I mean, they were just outside the top 25. I believe if I saw the votes correctly, they were like second out from the top 25. Like, how do you beat Iowa and you're not giving this team respect? Like,
yeah.
It's pretty clear that North Dakota State is an awfully good football team to do this to Iowa. I mean, that was a heck of a game. But, I mean, where's the love? Like, we can't give this team any love. We can't show them that the respect that they've earned. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, especially, I mean, no disrespect to them. I'm sure they're a pretty good team, but, you know, San Diego State's in the top 25.
Yeah. And they didn't beat Iowa. I mean, nothing against them, but they didn't beat Iowa. I mean, I don't think that, you know, Iowa is a world beater. I never really bought into them too much last year, but, I mean, they're certainly a top 25 team. And North Dakota State just beat them. Like, I don't understand. They're so quick to move teams up and down on a weekly basis, but yet we're not going to move them up? That to me is really bizarre.
It'll be funny, too, when the college football playoff rankings come out. Maybe the committee will actually put North Dakota State in, because, hey, we talk about signature wins. That's a hell of a signature win for a school like that.
Fantastic win.
You know, for an FCS program to go to Iowa, a team that was pretty damn close to making the playoffs last year. You know, they were undefeated pretty much up until, you know, the last week of the season, up until the Big Ten Championship. If they would have won that, they'd have been in the playoffs. So, you know, that's why polls are weird, voting's weird, but, you know, that's college football for you. And then, of course, quick, your other team, Houston, impressive win over Cincinnati, 40-16. So as they continue their climb toward the playoffs as well. So, hey, we could potentially be looking at a playoff that involves Houston and Louisville. Again, it's early, you know, we're only 3 weeks in, but, you know, if these teams keep winning, it's going to be hard to keep them out.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And that's really the name of the game, is you just keep winning. And, you know, style points matter, unfortunately. But a lot of these teams do end up losing and getting knocked off at the very end. I mean, we argue it every year. You know, who deserves to be where? Well, then a team loses in the last 3 weeks, and guess what? It doesn't matter. So what it comes down to is don't worry about your margin of victory too much. Become a better team.
Yeah.
Work on what you need to work on so that when it comes down to crunch time, you've already practiced what you need to practice. Make sure your schemes are solid. Make sure your players are in the right position at a high level. And just make sure that even your backups are ready to hit the field if need be, because that's definitely going to happen at some point. So injuries do strike. And so, you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, take care of your business. And if you can win with style points, that's fine, but that's not the point. The point's not necessarily just to blow them out. The point is to make sure that you're prepared for everything when the season comes down, because if you're able to prep for those tough situations right now, that may be the difference maker, even in one play. It could just be one play later in the season where it does make that season-defining moment.
And that's why I think the one thing college basketball has over college football is they don't have their committee post rankings like, you know, 7 weeks before the final rankings. I mean, you know, obviously it creates ratings, it creates drama and conversation and whatnot. But really, it's all about who's there at the end. You know, it's not about who's at the top in the middle of October. It's about who's at the top on December 3rd, or whatever that Sunday is. But so looking ahead to some of the games this week, you know, we've got a couple games this week hitting top 25 teams against each other, a couple of them in the SEC. Number 12, Georgia, visits number 23, Ole Miss. Number 19, Florida, at number 14, Tennessee. And we've also got a third one in the SEC as well, so all of them in the SEC. 17th-ranked Arkansas and 10th-ranked Texas A&M. That's right, there's also in the Big Ten 11th-ranked Wisconsin and 8th-ranked Michigan State. So some good games coming up this week. Penn State, of course, they're at Michigan, so
it's a big challenge.
It'll be tough, and they just lost Wortman White for the season. So that's three starting linebackers for Penn State, out with injuries. Could be a tough go, but like I said, overall the week looks pretty good. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, starting with the Penn State-Michigan game, I think that Penn State has a chance in this game. You know, I watched Michigan last week against Colorado. Quite frankly, they were in a position to lose until late in the game. Colorado kind of ran out of gas. And I don't think that Penn State is a team. I think they're more talented than that Colorado team. And I think that they could certainly go into the Big House and give Michigan a run for their money. I don't think Michigan should be ranked the fourth-ranked team in the country. It's no disrespect to them. Maybe they'll prove me wrong. Jabril Peppers has had a great season so far, definitely solidifying himself as an impact player. But this is where you have to question that Michigan offense. I'm not sold on it. I know that they put up points last week, but Penn State, if they can force a couple early turnovers and withstand any home, you know, big blows that Michigan can throw at home out of the gate, force a turnover to get themselves some good field position, just let Saquon Barkley do his thing. You know, I'm not sold that this is a rollover victory for Michigan, as the rankings might sort of suggest. We're going to see some upsets soon, because now we're starting this interconference play, and that's when stuff starts to get crazy, and this is really when college football really becomes fun. And, you know, I think this is going to be a really close game. I think this is going to be a fun one.
Speaking of the Big Ten, nice of Northwestern to finally join the party, too, beating Duke after losing to, Illinois State and Western Michigan first 2 weeks of the season. So, well, welcome back, Northwestern. But, yeah, I mean, obviously I'd love to see Penn State stun Michigan. That would be just fantastic. obviously it's going to be a tall order, but, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Say, you know,
yeah, for sure. For sure. And that's all you can do. It's all you can do is just say, hey, you know, we need to show up. We need to play our best game. We need to execute at a high level. We need to attack their weaknesses and force them to play to their weaknesses. You know, it's easier said than done, but that's what basically every week comes down to. And you just got to hope that the players and the coaches are on the same page. And it's possible now. It's hard to outcoach Michigan. It's hard to outcoach Jim Harbaugh. So we'll see. I think Harbaugh is going to have his guys ready to play. But that being said, you can see the formula to win against them. They're not an overly explosive team. They are a very solid and very fundamentally sound team, though. Mm-hmm. So if they make those mistakes, you've got to take advantage of them. But I think that, and I think that the Wisconsin-Michigan State game, I think those are going to be the two big games outside of the SEC matchups this week. I think Wisconsin's a good team. I don't think they have the firepower to really stand up to Michigan State. I'm a little bit surprised Wisconsin's ranked 11th. Michigan State seemed to come alive last week and started to show why that they're a top 10 team. So I think Michigan State takes this game maybe by even two scores. But it should be a physical game, and it should be a fun one to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, like we said, you know, it should be a fun week, and we'll be back next week to kind of recap it all. With that, I think that's a good place to kind of wrap things up. Any last words you want to get in there before we head out?
Not really. The other two games I'm probably going to be watching closely just from an entertainment standpoint. This weekend would be looking at the, like you mentioned, Arkansas and Texas A&M. I think Texas A&M is for real. I think Texas A&M may end up winning this game and further strengthening their stance. And I also think that the Oklahoma State-Baylor game could be really fun. I think we'll see fireworks go off early and often in that matchup. So those are two games that I'm going to be watching late on Saturday night, among others. But, you know, and of course I'll be doing scouting of quarterbacks. I'll probably be charting some quarterbacks as well. So should be a good weekend of football. Looks like a strong slate, especially the NFL. I think it's an especially strong NFL weekend. We touched on some of the big matchups and some of the early storylines. So overall, man, I love it. We're in the thick of the football season, and we're starting to hit pressure points early.
Absolutely. And here's hoping my high school team can finally get our first win of the season this week. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, good luck to them.
Thank you. So with that, thanks as always for listening. Really do appreciate it. Remember, hit up Ian at NFL Film Study. Tell him how much his rankings suck. No, I'm kidding. Don't do that. But yeah, do check out his work on the NFL 1000 because he's doing fantastic work. He's checking out the corners and, you know, follow everybody, you know, starting, of course, with Doug Farrar. Doug, if you're listening, I want to intern under you. I want to learn everything you know. check out all the work. It's fantastic. You know, they do week-by-week rankings of just about every player in the league, so it's good stuff. And then follow me at Bill_Setti. Tell me how much my work sucks, and I'm not kidding about that.
No, not at all. Not at all. You do good work, and you know, appreciate your kind words. I know that we're working hard. Don't tell us how much we suck until at least after Tuesdays, because I know that we're all pretty exhausted by the end of Tuesday watching all those games and grading all those players. But you know, but usually by Thursday time rolls around, it's all good. We can debate, let's have some fun, and you know, talk football.
And then by that time, it's a brand new week anyway, so some of the stuff will be moot points anyway.
For sure, for sure.
All right, so with that, thanks, guys, for listening. Enjoy the football this week. I know we will. It's always exciting. And check us back here next time right here on GG. Until then, take care, my friends.